Welcome to another edition of the Disciples Men podcast. Alex Ruth, your Associate Director of Disciples Men with you, as well as Greg Alexander, who is the Director of Disciples Men. And today we're going to follow up on a podcast that we're going to be releasing at the same time as this one, of a conversation with the Director of the National Convocation, the Reverend Dr. Tim James. And so, Greg, first off, thank you for joining us this afternoon for the conversation.
Hey, Alex, great to be with you. I'm excited about this opportunity to process our time with Dr. James.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal conversation. And we wanted to take a few moments to think through some of the learnings that we received, you and I, during that time together with Dr. James the other afternoon. So let's start by giving the reins over to you and seeing how you'd like to direct our conversation today.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to go. Tim, as I said in the broadcast, our podcast is really one of the most beloved leaders of our church. And I've been privileged to know Tim a long time, consider him a friend. And he's just a brilliant leader for our denomination.
Yes.
He gave us some perspective of what it's like to be a male, African-American, but more specifically a male in our culture, even today, after, you know, the strides that we think we've made to overcome racism in our culture. He mentioned that the disciples may be the only church that has a directive of becoming an anti-racist, pro-reconciling church, and has put the mechanisms in place to move us in that direction. And you and I both have had a lot of history with that, and certainly in the national level, bi-national level, you know, with college or regional ministers and other places. There's great attention that's given to the leadership of the church currently, requiring many, I don't know if all, but most regions now require the pro-reconciliation, anti-racism training that's a part of our standing, which is our right to do ministry as a disciple of clergy. So, you know, that's becoming a part of just the base understanding of what we need to know to do effective ministry in the 21st century.
Yeah.
I know all the institutions, all of their employees go through the PRAR training. Tim challenged us to make sure that the Disciples Men's organization completes the PRAR training as well, which we will certainly attend to. You and I have had that training as employees of Disciples Home Missions. That's one of the major foci of DHM, is making sure that all the 20-some, 30-some employees of DHM go through that training. And it's for you and for me. I know it's a great joy to be able to serve and do ministry with such a phenomenally diverse and talented group of people.
Yes.
You know, we white males are kind of few and far between on staff, which is a great thing. Something both of us celebrate.
Yes.
So you know, we're in a position where, as much as we think the journey that we've had since the 1960s, since the time of civil rights, I remember living through that journey. You know, sometimes we get complacent, thinking that we've made a lot more strides than we have, and clearly, it's a different world in visibly today than it was in the 1960s, 50s and 60s when I grew up as a kid. There's really no comparison. But what Tim reminded us is that, you know, there's a subtlety to racism that's built into the very institutional fabric of who we are in every institution in the United States, in Western culture. And we, as white males who enjoy the privilege, whether we seek it or not, it comes with being who we are genetically. in this culture that we sometimes get desensitized to the subtle racism that still exists for our brothers and sisters who are African American or all people of color in Western societies. And that's I thought for me, Tim's recounting of his journey, his family's journey, some of the stuff that he deals with every day. I mean, everywhere he goes, he always has to be on and aware of the fact that he is an African American male in a culture that's predominantly white patriarchal. And you and I don't have to think about that.
Right.
And I was especially taken by the time he spent sharing the stresses and, you know, that creates significant health concerns for the African American community.
Yeah.
Our brothers and sisters of color, just because of having to deal and be on guard 24/7 in every aspect of their lives. And while intellectually I know that, it was emotionally challenging for me to sit and be reminded of that again, as Tim shared a lot of his story with us. I want to kick it back to you and just invite you to share some of your observations, feelings about the conversation. Then we can get more into the institutional side of it as we move ahead.
I appreciated to the honesty and the vulnerability that Tim showed us during that time of really trying to help us understand the experience of being a man and a man of color, a black man in today's society. I've had the privilege of hearing some similar heartrending stories from other colleagues in ministry, and that has deeply impacted my understanding of the importance of being a church with that focus on being anti-racist, more than just pro-reconciliation, because that has the opportunity and all too often becomes, why don't you all become like me? And that's not the point. The point is we need to become like all of us and find out what that looks like. And as yet, that's unknown. We don't know what that looks like. So it's a little bit hard to point at and say, this is how we do it, because we don't know where the end is. But I do think it is important for us to take the steps and do the work. One of the things that I was thinking of as we're beginning this conversation goes back to our training in PRAR, Pro-Reconciliation Anti-Racism, last fall with DHM. And that was the importance of not placing the burden for the education on the people of color. You know, it is your responsibility, it's my responsibility as white men to seek out and to educate ourselves. It's not Tim's job to educate you and I. It's our job to become educated ourselves. It's our responsibility to do that. And really hearing that during that training sparked me towards a practice that I'm trying this year to varying levels of success, which is I've made it my commitment to focus my reading that I do for learning, for continuing education, for just growing as a person, but to focus my reading on authors who are different from me. So I've been reading a lot of African-American authors, trying to read more female authors reading, currently working through an author who's both female and Asian Pacific descent, and trying to broaden my horizons that way. And Dr. James mentioned a book that was early on my list, Crossing the Lynching Tree by James Cone. And that was a difficult to read book because of the subject matter. Cone, obviously, he's never really easy to read. He's a theologian and he deals with some concepts that are pretty heady. But the biggest thing for me was the crossing of those two vital images, one in our history as a nation and the other in our history of faith, the cross and lynching tree, and how those intersect. It's a book that I think anybody in ministry probably needs to read that book. It was profoundly moving for me. I need to go back and read it again to glean more out of it. That was profoundly, it was gratifying to hear Dr. James say, this is a good book and it's something that I've just recently read. But on the other hand, it was profoundly moving to have that reinforced, the importance of that kind of conversation that Dr. Cone highlights for us and really holds up. And I think the other thing that particularly struck a chord with me, I think with both of us, was when Dr. James talked a lot about relationship and how we need to build that, and that's the foundation for our path forward. As the people of my congregation that I serve would tell you, I tend to be focused on relationships. I'm going to talk about relationships any chance I get. Our relationships with one another, with ourselves, and with God are very central to my theological framework. And so to hear that from Dr. James, again, yes, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to talk about that. And using that then as a springboard, as the foundation for future conversations about men's ministry that then holds up people from a varied and beautiful, diverse background. I know we've talked before about longing to create something that honors and celebrates the diversity that we have as people and specifically as disciples.
I was taken by actually how we had sort of misunderstood one of the roles that we can play as disciples men in helping both our denomination and our culture food becoming a pro-reconciling anti-racist society and church. You and I have had some conversation with our racial ethnic leaders. And for those who don't know, who listening, is that there are three constituency groups that are recognized by disciples that each have their own head of constituency. One is the convocation, national convocation, which Dr. James serves as the executive secretary of that organization, and he recounted the history of that for us last week. And then there is Obra Hispania, which is the organization that represents our Latina disciples, and then we have NAPAD, the North American Asian Pacific Disciples, which is represents our disciples who are of Asian descent. And each of those organizations have very strong presence within the disciples as a whole. They have tremendous leadership that blesses the whole church. And I'm very grateful that I've had a chance to experience some of the gifts and graces that have flowed to us from the breadth and depth of who we are as disciples. And we had a conversation with with those three individuals that, well, you need to identify them, Tim James, Dr. Tim James, who's our representative of Convocation, Reverend Lori Tapia, who is our National Hispanic Pastor for Obra Hispania, and Chung-Suk Kim, who is the executive director of NAPAT. And so these folks have been in conversation with us about how we might be able to build a disciples curriculum, a disciples men's curriculum from the ground up. And got kind of excited about that. And the whole disciple men, the General Conference disciple men leadership really had great energy around that and excitement. Well, when we had our conversation with Dr. James last week, he suggested in a very kind way, which is his style, that maybe we were a little bit off base in the direction we were wanting to go with that. And one of the things that that really struck me in our conversation was the importance of understanding each other's history. You and I are products of, you know, the American educational system. And of course, you know, we are aware that it is heavily biased to tell,
yes,
you know, tell the history of white Americans, and it's not so bent in telling the story and the histories of non-white Americans. And, you know, it's a shame that we have to have a Black History Month, you know, that's, you know, to remind us of the importance of Black history and what it is to us as a whole people, you know, the American people. And so, Dr. James was suggesting that maybe we find ways to build our relationships one with another through learning each other's histories in the church, and of course our personal histories and involvement, but understanding the role that our constituency groups have had in making the disciples who we are today. And we wouldn't be who we are today if it wasn't for the contribution of all.
Right.
And so I was really taken back by that, and about how we sort of really missed the boat. But after further reflection, I'm going, well, yeah, this is what any consultant would tell us where to begin if we were paying attention. So that's, I've, you know, certainly encouraged that in other contexts. And that was my blind spot, one of my many blind spots in that conversation. So I got really excited about the possibility of that and where that might go. And I think hopefully we will find a lot of energy in all of our, all four constituency groups in helping to shape something that would serve the whole, not just disciples men, but I think even the whole church, as a way of really doing the pro-reconciliation, anti-racism work that's not driven institutionally, but is grounded relationally, which you so eloquently stated is so important to you.
And yeah. I
agree.
Yeah, I agree I don't know that we missed the boat. We might have just been four or five steps ahead of where we probably needed to start. And I base that on what you said earlier, and that's this general assumption that we might be farther along this journey than we really are. And that's probably based in several things, you know, some of them being our own situatedness, our contexts of being white men. Therefore, it's, you know, we don't face the same struggles that Dr. James highlighted. I don't walk into a store and have someone naturally be afraid of me or, you know, react to me in a negative way because I am normative, for better or worse. I think that, you know, that's part of the reason, you know, our context has developed some blinders that we just miss out on. And so I'm really grateful for Dr. James highlighting that, lifting that up, and for your leadership in saying, hey, let's take a step back and think about a different way that we might create and develop those relationships, so that those relationships can help other men develop their own relationships, and from those relationships, then we can develop a study that is multivocal and more diverse from the ground up.
I would agree, and I appreciate you saying that. The other thing I want us to make sure to all the people who are listening is, you can't blow this off.
No.
I went back and I lived it, and then went back and listened again intently to the conversation we had with Dr. James. And you know, sometimes it's hard to imagine that kind of a life, because it is so foreign to the privileges you and I get without thought. We don't ask for them. They're just there, and we just live our lives in them and through them. Mm-hmm. And so to our disciple men and women who are listening to us, let us stress, please take this very seriously. You know, the lives of people of color in our culture are radically different, not because they want them to be different, but because the racism that's built into the American system forces that upon them. And I was not as aware of the health concerns that stress would cause, but it makes sense. I mean, we all know the negative impact stress has on our health and well-being. And to live under that kind of stress 24/7, of course, you know, people of color are going to have tremendously more health issues to deal with, and they're having to deal with them in a healthcare system that really could care less about them.
Yes.
And so, you know, a double whammy. So where does that put those of us who are white men listening to this podcast? Well, it means that we've got to roll up our sleeves and go to work. Number one, we got to heighten our sensitivity to what's going on with our brothers and sisters who are not white. And we need to make sure that we are not contributing to the anxiety or to the tension that they are dealing with every breath they draw. And so as we prepare to create these resources in partnership and make them available, we want to say, you need to do this. You need to start forming relationships and experiencing the power of love to bridge all of these divides, you know, that the negative side of who we are keeps trying to create, you know, when we're operating out of our reptilian brain, and all we focus on is fight, flight, freeze, instead of forcing, you know, ourselves into the rational brain, which is a great gift God has given only to us as human beings. Is that we need to get up and start living out of the rational brain and seeing how we build relationships, forge real solid relationships where we understand the value of working together, living together, and sharing our gifts with one another to create, you know, a whole that is much greater than the sum of its parts. We have to overcome our fear of one another and begin to embrace each other in the oneness that is ours in Jesus Christ. And Tim was very eloquent about that.
Yes.
That's incumbent upon us to create the space and the place for that kind of personal development within ourselves to occur. It will not happen without intentionality. It will not happen without us knowing that it is the right thing to do, and let it call us forward into that kind of life and existence.
Yes.
And to pretend it's somebody else's problem is frankly sin.
Yes.
That's what it is. Yep. And, you know, I was thinking today, because I actually saw this when I was driving home this morning from the grocery. Is someone near where we live, there used to be this big field, and they would have a Christian rock concert for kids every summer called Ichthus. And, you know, I don't know how widespread it was, but we just lived like 5 miles from where Ichthus used to happen. Doesn't happen anymore, but it did. And they'd fill that campground with thousands of kids and, you know, Christian kids. And, you know, and one of the things that I was noticing is someone had painted a cross on a barn on the property. And I'm going, we would all get really upset the fact that a Christian would deface somebody else's property with a cross. We would all think that's horrible. But racism for Christians, when we practice racism as Christians, aren't we defacing people of color?
Yes.
With a cross?
Yes.
And isn't that what we've always done?
Yeah.
And when we allow the unchecked greed that's taking place in our culture and is manifested by so much of the leadership in our culture, you know, the self-serving, no longer public servant model that is being modeled for us today, when we bless that with a cross, are we not doing the same thing of painting a cross on greed that Jesus clearly spoke against? I mean, and go on down the list of things, but here we are, you know, painting a cross on somebody's property we would get upset about. But using that same image of the cross that we paint over our racism and our greed, et cetera, we think God won't care about that.
Right.
And so it's a matter of creating a different way of understanding how our day-to-day life unconsciously, lived unconsciously, so negatively impacts brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ. I guess I better stop preaching.
I might call out asking you to preach. What I hear there, Greg, is twofold at least, and the major point is that a lot of this goes back to stuff we've talked about before. A lot of it pushes back towards that image of the immature masculine, where everything is about competition, and I only get ahead when somebody else is defeated or demoted or put down. And that is a very other-centered way of thinking of things, other-centered in that I take my cues as to who I am or my value from somebody else. I externalize those values. And what we've talked about and what we're trying to do in all of our ministries is to turn that value system around so that we're figuring out who we are internally by our, you know, from who God says we are. And that in turn flips around the way that we're focused and focuses us instead of inward on me, what can I get? It focuses us outward and how can I serve? How can I serve my sibling? How can I serve my neighbor? How can I serve the homeless man or woman or child down the street? How can I serve the person with mental illness? How can I serve somebody who's LGBTQ? How can I serve my, Black or Hispanic or Latinx or, you know, Asian? How can I serve others? The one part that we still struggle with as a denomination and as a culture at large is, how do I serve the indigenous people who were here long before my ancestors ever dreamed of coming across the ocean?
Right. We've got a big task ahead of us. It's one that's it's not new. It's been, you know, it's been a part of our lives our whole life long, and we're sensitive to it. And I do appreciate you tying all of it back together in some of our previous stuff, because it is all of a whole. The whole idea of the, you know, the Jesus way journey is to remind us is that Jesus showed us a way to live life both in him and together in him.
Yeah.
And there are certain aspects of that within ourselves that have to be transitioned or overcome, or, you know, hung upon the cross, or whatever language you want to use, in order for us to begin to embrace the life that Jesus is calling us to live. There are some things that have to go away, that have to die within us in order for us to embrace what Christ is calling us to embrace as we live our lives, you know, following the model Jesus established. And so, you know, the immature masculine, the mature masculine, the realm of influence, competition, you know, all of those things that we've been lifting up are not just nice ideas. They're part and parcel of what's required for us to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And to think that we do it without making those kinds of transitions and in our lives, those rites of passage in our lives, it's just foolishness.
Yeah.
I mean, we mock God when we think that there's nothing required of me other than just throwing a little money in the plate and showing up one Sunday a month.
Right.
And that's just goofy. And to think for anybody to think that that's all God requests of us, well, you're playing with fire.
I agree. The other thing that echoes back to me is this idea of intentionality. And that may be a topic for another day when we talk about that a little more fully. But that's echoed to me in both our conversation with Dr. James and then in our conversation today, that this isn't going to happen unless we intentionally, actively make it happen.
Indeed.
You know, the progress isn't just going to miraculously, we're not going to wake up tomorrow morning and have all the problems fixed. Honestly, in your or my lifetime, we're probably not going to see an end to all the problems, maybe not even in my children's lifetime. But that also does not exempt us from the work, right?
That's right. And it starts when we acknowledge it's not their problem. It's ours. It's mine.
Yeah.
I am the problem. And Jesus showed me a way to not be as much of a problem as I am. And to actually maybe tip the scale towards being more blessing than problem.
Right.
You know, more blessing than jerk. And so it does require, as you said, that intentionality. And obviously, it's showing I have some real passion for this stuff, but make no apologies for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is the journey. And, you know, I've given the last 40 years of my life to trying to help people understand, you know, that it's not about the people around you. It's all about you. You know, it starts with you. And you've got to be intentional about, you know, dealing with you in relationship with God. What does it mean? What must change? You know, what do I embrace? What passions become, you know, my priorities, et cetera. And we go through this whole thing. And the whole Jesus way concept is an attempt to flesh out the major themes, you know, that require our intentionality to address in order to begin to move in that direction of truly being a blessing to God and to the world, and to experience the blessing of being a blessing to God in the world. And so again, it's not that you and I can create curriculum. It's not for any other reason than this is what ministry demands. It's not about the color of the carpet of the church. You know, it's not about what time we have worship. It's not about actually whether we're able to gather in our sanctuary spaces or we do it virtually. It really isn't. The question is always, am I doing what God is asking me to do to be a better me, to be a more faithful me, to be the child of God that God created me to be in the world? That's it. And, you know, and are there other tools that people can embrace besides the one you and I are working on? Absolutely.
Heck yeah.
We have never claimed any exclusiveness to this. It is just a way of following the way. And that's what we're trying to do. And I am so grateful to Dr. James for him coming and reminding us of this one aspect, mm-hmm. vitally important aspect of what needs to change in you and me and so many in our culture in order for it to become, you know, a much more whole and accepting place for all. We've got so much work to do.
We do. And I am grateful, Greg, that we are on this journey and working together, and grateful for all those who are investing in their time, their energy, and their prayers, and just themselves in following and joining us on this journey of faith, following the Jesus way.
We've got a great system of support, and they don't get near enough credit, you know, for the work that they're doing. And, you know, we're very blessed to be surrounded by a cast of beautiful, right now, beautiful men.
Yes.
You know, of who represent the breadth and depth of who we are as disciples. It's not an exclusively white man's club.
Yes.
And we're learning and being learning from each other, being blessed by each other. And so, but we need to make sure that people understand this isn't just a Alex and Greg show. Is that this is that we, you know, we just have the privilege of representing this wonderful network of beautiful Christian men who are really working hard at trying to be faithful. And I just thank God for the privilege of these guys every day. I know it's time for us to kind of wrap this up, but I want to take a moment to announce the very special guest we have coming up.
Yes, please do.
I think two podcasts from now. We will be privileged to have the Reverend Terry Horde-Owens, who is the General Minister President of the Christian Church of Disciples of Christ in the United States and Canada, as our guest. And so, again, that's a couple weeks away before we're going to be able to have that opportunity to work with Terry, and she loves like to be called Terry. And so just a marvelous leader for our church, just an extraordinarily impressive person. We are so blessed to have her as our General Minister President, or in our language, our GMP. And so the fact that she's agreed to come on with us is just really exciting.
Yeah, I am super excited about that as well. And thank you for all your efforts in making that a reality.
No problem. Delighted to do it.
Well, Greg, as you said, we're approaching our end of the time together today. Do look forward to our next conversation. Thank you again for your time, for your leadership, and for your insights.
And same to you, Alex.
We'll see you soon.
All righty. Take care, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
Our special thanks to our good friend, the Reverend Dr. Dean Phelps, for providing the special music of this podcast. You can discover more of Dean's music at deanphelpsmusic.com. And you can learn more about the ministry of Disciples Men on Facebook and through discipleshomemissions.org.